Hey everyone, and welcome to episode number 34 of the Woffin Porson podcast. In this week's episode, and to be honest, for future episodes as well, guys, we're going to be diving into the world of language around our dogs and dog training. And honestly, we'll probably get into a little bit of life itself. For example, I've just used the word guys as a term that I collectively refer to you all as, which in my mind has no gender concept whatsoever, but I appreciate for many it absolutely does. So already, even within my intro, the world of language can become a treacherous minefield of understanding and interpretation. So we're going to dive into a bit more of that through various episodes as we finish off 2021 and move into 2022 around the language that we use with our dogs and in dog training. So hope it doesn't get too heavy, folks, but enjoy. Okay, folks, so language. Honestly, I'm not qualified to talk about this, really. I'm not brilliant with the spoken or the written word of my native tongue. However, I'm very aware of how impactful it is in society and especially within dog training. So I've honestly thought about doing these episodes for a while now, and honestly, I've probably chickened out of them because I'm very aware they can cause a lot of heated debate, they can become very emotive very quickly, and I'm going to do my level best to try and keep that out of the equation, but I'm sure I'll trip up along the way, but I hope that you will bear with me and listen and hear me out. So when we talk about language, how I speak, just as I did in the intro, I'm absolutely kind of, you know, I can't even speak now. I'm talking about language, I'm losing the words. But I'm completely typical of somebody who will say words, use phrases, and say things where my understanding, my interpretation of certain words and the context in which I use them, I will not put a lot of thought or energy. It's quite natural. I talk the way I talk, and words will come out which I may mean one way and can be interpreted another. However, if you look at any movement in life, anything where we've tried to drive change, hopefully positive change, one of the first things that we have to tackle is the use of language. Because whether we are conscious of it or not, the words that we use are very impactful. So, you know, I grew up in a world where that whole sticks and stones break your bones type little rhymes used to be thrown around of ways to deal with lots of different circumstances. Bullying, for example. You know, it was always this kind of don't worry about it, sticks and stones will break your bones, words will never hurt you type way of almost talking yourself out of language that people were using towards you that might have affected you in a way to try and dilute it, diminish it or dismiss it. However, I'm fairly sure that if anyone has been on the receiving end of bullying, and I absolutely have, probably quite atypical school bullying, not condoning it, but you know, that's the world that I lived in. And you know, I had lots of other support strategies, things around me that made those events not overly impacting to me in a negative way, which is amazing. I mean, I'm incredibly lucky for that. But did it mean that the words at the actual time didn't hurt and didn't make me upset? Of course they did. Absolutely. Language is a very, very powerful tool. Let's be honest, it's why media is so powerful in our world, because media is all about that language, visual and written, and even verbal, that, you know, can really impart and focus how we think. Social media is another great example. So when it comes to having any discussion about the words that we use, especially with our dogs, it can take a little bit of time and effort to really stop and think and reassess, and whether the word in question that we may want to tackle is even worth it. So what I mean by that is, honestly guys, I try not to push my viewpoints and opinions heavily onto anyone I work with. I will share what I think and what I feel and why I think and feel those things. 100%, of course I will. But I won't kind of demand that that's the terminology or the words or whatever that my clients have to use, because that's not what they're here. They're not there for a lecture from me about in this scenario, about language and words that we use. But I will explain why I use certain words, and for those who are interested, I will absolutely dive deeper into it, which is what I'm going to do in this podcast. So, for example, you will hear me talk a lot in previous podcasts about pooch parents. Pooch parents, guardians, handlers, or even owners. Now, the most common word I come across for people who have a dog in their family, in their life, they will refer to themselves and refer to other people with dogs as the dog's owner. And I will absolutely fall into that trap occasionally as well. Of course I will, because I grew up with it. It's the words and the language I was exposed to the most, and therefore it's kind of hardwired into me. And if I'm not thinking about the words I'm using, I will just throw it out there as a throwaway descriptive word just in general conversation. However, I try my best to call them something else other than owners. And there's a few reasons behind that. Now, interestingly, as part of, I actually did a little bit of research for this particular episode, guys, you will be impressed. Again, there I go again saying, guys, folks, let me try and make a conscious effort, and I'm going to call you all folks as a collective term for you fantastic listeners. So, folks, I went onto Google and I typed in owner definition into my search bar, and my first little bit of the result out of, how many that is, that 4.2 million results, I think, if I can count my numbers correctly. Funnily enough, maths is also not a strong point of mine. But in the top, right at the front page of Google, there's the dictionary, and there is the word owner. It's a noun. And this, I couldn't actually believe this when I saw it, the description here is a person who owns something. And in quotes, the proud owner of a huge Dalmatian. Now, I didn't set this up, guys. That was the Google definition that came up when I searched for it. The fact that it was dog related, honestly, couldn't have worked better, because I am the proud owner of a huge Dalmatian. Now, when you take that into context with the line above, which is a person who owns something, the reason I avoid that language is I don't believe I own my dog. I 100% believe I'm responsible and accountable for my dog. Yes, absolutely I am. But I don't own them. And the reason I don't like using the word own is because, again, whether this is conscious or not, it drives this mentality of I'm now referring to my dog in the same way that I might refer to my mobile phone or my laptop or my house or my car or my cutlery or my books or whatever it is where I've been and spent money and bought a product or an item or an inanimate object that is now something that is mine and I own it. Now, don't get wrong, I know we go out there and we potentially are spending money on our dogs. Probably another debate for another day. But again, I personally, I don't see my role in my dog's life as their owner. They're not a thing. They're not something I bought off a shelf. They're a living, breathing creature with a mind and a personality and wants and needs and everything else that I've got to take into account. So whenever I speak with clients, I do refer to, most commonly, pooch parents, which really irritates some people. Apologies if that is a little bit nails down chalkboard to you, but I don't generally say handler, because I think that devalues the relationship a little bit. Even though it's very accurate at that moment in time, I'm handling the dog, if I'm working with the dog. But generally, because I work a lot with kind of what would probably class as kind of pet dogs, people who have dogs in their family, they're part of, the kind of living life together. They're not really a working dog or any of those types of descriptions. That's why I often refer to them as pooch parents, because I quite like the word pooch for a dog, and you're kind of their parent. You're there to provide, you're there to guide, you're there to support, you're there to educate, you're there to do all the things that ultimately parents will do with human children as much as you will do with your dog. And as a result, I think personally that reflects that type of dynamic and that interaction between me and my dog much better. And it's why I avoid that O word. Because even though it's a small change, if I say it enough, and if I start to use it enough, I will start to attach that meaning and that value and those interpretations of what, for example, parent. If I say the word parent to somebody who is responsible for a dog, and I say you are this dog's parent, you might not be their biological parent, of course not, they're a different species, but your role in their life is incredibly similar to that as you would obviously with a human child. And as a result, because the word parent often invokes quite a strong emotional response from a person, and also again all those kind of branches that link off that word, what does it mean to be a parent, for example, if you were to write that list down, all the things that a parent is and does and has to be, it's exhaustive, and there's a lot of responsibility there, and it can be quite daunting. But that's kind of the scale of what it's like to have a dog in your family. There's a lot that you have to do. Honestly, I kind of say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek quite a lot with clients, but I often say dogs are harder work than people, because due to the way they live their lives and how they have to live their lives, their kind of brain development compared to humans and everything else, is I'm going to have hopefully 10, 15 plus years of an animal in my life where certain aspects of me providing for them will never change. So for example, if I was to have a child and they went from being born to being 15, by the time they're 15, there's a lot of things in their life that they are able to do for themselves, because they've learned it and they've got the mental and hopefully the physical kind of capabilities to do it. So getting dressed, for example, going exercising, socializing, prepping food, whatever it might be, but a lot of children of that age are very capable and competent at doing such things. However, with my dog, they're not. You know, this isn't a kind of, not a similar kind of state of return in terms of investment into training and things like that. My dogs don't get older and learn how to walk themselves and can be safe and can navigate traffic and people and other dogs and other animals without my guidance, supervision and support. I always have to be there. Same with feeding. You know, I'm very much kind of responsible for that for my dog. And so many other aspects of their life is pretty much the same from the moment they enter the family until sadly the moment they leave. And therefore that parental responsibility is huge. So that's why I start to want to deliberately change the language that I use with a lot of my clients for that reason. Because I kind of want to almost subliminally start to link all of that responsibility, all of that effort, all of that value, all of that commitment that it takes as a parent to be with your dog as well. And that very small shift in language from the word owner to the word parent or guardian, for example, is very much rooted in that. It's about trying to shift mindsets away from that inanimate property-like connotation that the word owner has around it. So again, I'm just going to pause myself there, because do it, feel free guys, grab a pen, grab a piece of paper, write down the word parent or write down the word guardian, and list all of the other words that come to mind, all the things that you think that word invokes. What does it mean to be, you know, a parent or a guardian? What, you know, what are you accountable for? What are you responsible for? What is kind of, what other emotions does that word invoke within you? Then write down the word owner, and then write down that similar. So what, even in the way I say it, I can feel it. I'm kind of trying to do this in my head, guys, as I'm kind of talking away into the microphone here, but I'm trying to almost make a mental list. If I was to write the word owner down on a piece of paper and then write associated words with that, I can't help feel it's going to be quite a short list. There's not a lot to it. It doesn't really invoke a lot kind of from me in terms of what that word means, whereas parent or guardian absolutely does. I'm not a parent, not to human children anyway, guys, so I haven't even got a frame of reference for this. But if you do, if you're a person who's lucky enough to have children in your life, whether they be biological or fostered or adopted, the emotional connotation that you're going to have around those words are huge. However, I know I'm a child, you know, I have parents, and so I'm kind of using that as my frame of reference. So when I say parent, I think of my mum and my dad, and all of those kind of emotions and all those additional words will just flood onto that paper. All the things that they did for me, amazing things that kind of gave me the life I've got, all of that stuff will just pour out, and I'll just kind of just go from one word to another, and it'll just grow arms and legs, and it will just be this almost never-ending list of stuff that that word invokes. Where with owner, I'm kind of running out pretty quick. And even the things that I am going to put on that list, again, they're going to be quite innate, and they're going to be quite kind of just, again, really bad with language, guys, so I'm struggling for some descriptive words here, but I'm trying to think of analogy. So even if I think of my car, like, what does the word ownership of a car mean? Well, yeah, I'm responsible for it, but it's inanimate. Like, yeah, it's a matter. Right now, I'm without a vehicle due to storm damage a few weeks ago, and it's a huge inconvenience. It's massively frustrating. It's a huge expense. Do I want the vehicle back in my life? Yes, I do, because it will make my life easier, and then I'll have to go back to fueling it and servicing it and MOTing it and insuring it and doing all of it. But none of those things are really, they don't drive connection. I am one of those people. I do kind of talk to my vehicles slightly like they're real, so I probably will put a bit more attachment to an inanimate object, certainly with vehicles, than I would say a lamp in my living room. But they are ultimately, you know, I might be a bit gutted if it breaks down. I'm gutted as I am now because my van's off the road, but it's nowhere near the emotional attachment that I put towards my dog. So almost by that analogy, I'm kind of in my head just, you know, making that distinction between the two. So me throwing away the word of owner around quite happily, I may not be doing it because I see my dog as an inanimate object, it's just a thing I bought off a shelf. However, do I really attribute the word to myself that reflects the effort and the time and the emotional investment that I put in to my dog or any other animal for that matter? And I think that's kind of that key difference. And that's why for me, shifting away from the word owner and starting to use a different word for it, guardian, pooch parent, whatever you like, that's why it's been such a big thing for me. Because I think it starts to reflect to me and also outwardly to those that I work with and to friends and family that's kind of the role I see myself as having. And when people may pass comment about, you know, my life with my dogs and how I treat them, and, you know, hopefully it's all very complimentary, that's kind of then dovetails those two things together. And it's a very small step, and in future episodes I will talk about lots of other words and terminologies and language that we use which can have this kind of social subculture kind of rooted to it, which can inadvertently and very quickly start to shift our mindsets when it comes to living and training and working with our dogs. So I feel like I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, guys, but again, I've done it again. Guys, see? It's so easy to do. It's so easy to do. And again, this is where language can be really complicated, because back to the you know, those natural intuition of words and language that I use, as I mentioned right at the top, that word is something I just throw around without any thought or context to. However, we're in a world now where we are probably more gender diverse than ever before, certainly openly gender diverse, which is amazing. And so much of that has come through the use of language. And I know it frustrates a lot of people when you talk to some, depending on your upbringing and your point of view and all that kind of stuff. So again, this is why it can very quickly become such an emotive topic, you know, one that will spark argument and debate very, very quickly. However, one interesting thing that's come about, certainly this year in the UK, in 2021, there's a new animal welfare bill that's kind of going through the motions at the moment. Now, bearing in mind, guys, we are 2021, And it's taken us to this point to where now, in law, we are in the processes of acknowledging that many animals, including dogs, are sentient beings. The reason that's important is that means, in the eyes of the law, once all these bills are passed and put in, is your dog is now no longer property. Now, interestingly, back to what we were talking about before, owner is the ownership of something. It's property. It's that inanimate stuff. And therefore, historically, even with law, those kind of actually worked, because as far as pretty much anyone other than you as the lover of that animal is concerned, or certainly from a legal perspective, is it's just a thing. It's just an object. You own it. It is property. And now, in 2021, in the UK, we're going through this motion of actually acknowledging they're living creatures. They're animals with emotions and thinking brains and personalities. They are sentient beings. So if I was to continue using the word owner beyond this point of all that legislation being put in, interestingly now, again, we're kind of back to these dynamics of words and meanings and understandings and what people will interpret those words as. But in its simplest form, I'm not sure my better half will appreciate this, but if I was to say I owned my wife, I can imagine not only would that probably very quickly end in divorce, but, and I hope you're taking this slightly tongue-in-cheek, listeners, as I say this, but like, if I was to say that in a public setting, I'm fairly sure like I would have a lot of probably outrage, either verbally or via looks across the table, even with friends and family, if I referred to a living, breathing person who I was married to as property, as something I owned. We are, again, certainly in the UK, we're in a fortunate position where, you know, with the way, you know, equal rights and everything else are concerned, obviously we move far beyond that as much as possible, which is brilliant and something we should absolutely advocate. So instantly me referring to my partner and my wife, in my case, as somebody I own, or my kids, if I had them again, but if I didn't, I said I owned my kids. Instantly, funnily enough now, that all those lists of associated words in that context suddenly gets a bit bigger. Yeah, what people would potentially infer what I meant by ownership of a person, of my spouse or my child, would, I imagine they could probably write a few pages of horrific things that word infers. However, when I was inferring it to a car, probably a little bit different, much shorter list. And the big shift between those two things is that emotive connection to the word and the context in which it is used. So ownership of a lamp versus ownership of a living, breathing, sentient being, they are, well, A, they're not relevant. You know, that's why I'm so pleased that we're moving away from kind of our old property-based law to the new animal welfare bills, because it hopefully is a great step in starting to shift the language and in turn the education and the association of emotions and associated words around our animals, and certainly our dogs in the case of this podcast, to something a lot more significant in terms of, you know, love, affection, responsibility, care, all these kind of words that mean, you know, we have an active role to play. We've got to give these animals the respect that they deserve and understand that they are a living, breathing thing that has those emotions, that has those thoughts, has the, you know, the same kind of feelings, etc., that we do, you know, very base level at least. And that has to be recognised. So when we do start to use language with our dogs, this is where certain words, certain phrases, certain things that we will throw about almost casually in the context of dog training, if we just start to tweak a few of them, we can have a massive, massive difference. And this is hard, absolutely hard. I, as I've kind of said in this podcast already, folks, is I grew up in a world where you would just, you know, you were a dog owner. It's what you were. You know, the law said it was property. Not that people ever kind of drew this distinction, but it was all kind of there. It was all kind of connected in the background of I was just a dog owner. And so many people unwittingly would refer to themselves as that, and therefore, like as I mentioned before, just kind of have that throwaway attachment to that statement. So I make that conscious effort to really try and refer to myself and those that I work with as something slightly different, and I try and use that language that creates that different kind of subconscious connection. In the last episode, we were talking about partnership. And again, this is where it all starts to kind of dovetail together. Because if I want that true partnership with my dog, I've got to respect them, of course I have. And that's kind of how partnership works. It's about that balance, about that understanding of each other. It's about those strengths and weaknesses and kind of dovetailing it all together. And to do that effectively with my dog, I absolutely need to put myself in a position and label, and labels is an interesting debate in dog training world anyway, but I have to use that language that almost reflects my position in that partnership. And is owner a reflection for me personally that fits that partnership bill? And personally for me, it absolutely doesn't. It's so far removed from how I see myself in my dog's life and how I see them in my life. It's why I actively try and avoid using it. I will slip up, as I mentioned, but that doesn't mean that I can't try and make changes. I can't try and almost reteach myself the language that I want to use to help reflect what I mean and what I feel when I think about my dogs and when I work with my dogs. And in turn, the more I can kind of train and coach myself into those bits of new language, then others will follow. And all of these things put together and the language I use will start to generate change in how I actually behave and work and look after my dogs. Going back to what we mentioned earlier around that kind of use of language and how powerful it is, if you look at any social movement around the world, anything where there is a real desire to change, look at the language that's used. Look at how in many things we have to consciously and actively try and change the words that we use, because the old words were either dismissive or downright offensive. And that's hard, really hard. Like, this isn't an easy thing to do at all, guys. And we've got many of them across all aspects of life that a lot of us are actively trying to be better at. And again, this is about, as always with dog training, it's about progress, not perfection. This isn't about me just completely relearning every single word I've ever used and being incredibly intelligent and articulate about how I use them, when I use them, the context, my audiences, because I'm just not that bright. I'm not going to lie, guys. Guys, see, done it again. I'm not that bright, folks. It's going to happen. I'm going to trip up. But if I can acknowledge it, and if I can be mindful of it, and if I can make those steps to try and change the language I use with my dogs, then 100% that's me on the right path. For me anyway, that definitely feels like I'm traveling in a direction that I'm proud of and a direction that I want to continue. Interestingly, it also then starts to become that cultural change. Because if I train 10 pooch parents, and they start to refer to themselves as pooch parents, I'm sure they won't, because again, it's a love or hate Marmite type expression, but bear with me, imagine they do. So there's 10 more people out in the world, plus me, there's 11, who will have conversations and interactions with friends and family and even Joe Public in the street about our dog, and may drop into their conversation about them being a pooch parent. And then imagine that just a few of those other people that they've interacted with start to adopt a similar term or phrase to refer to themselves as with their dogs. And then that's how we build momentum. And that's why language is so powerful and such a tool to drive that change. Because it's how it shifts. And then, as always, education is king. So if children and younger people here, adults and people in position of respect, for whatever reason, whether that's academic or professional or whatever it may be, using similar language, then that becomes almost just the phrases and the words that they use. So with our dogs, that's why I'm such a huge fan of it. And it's why with a lot of trainers out there. Some of them are incredibly passionate about ensuring that if you work with them, you use a similar language. And that can sometimes be a little bit kind of abrupt, I assume, for some people. Some people don't even talk about it at all. Some people might do it a little bit like I do and try and just make it a natural form of conversation in the hope that by osmosis, other people will start to pick it up and use it. But whatever the tactic is by those that you're working with, just have a think. Just look at the languages and the words that you might use with your dog. And in there's the certain ones, and I think what you label yourself as in relation to your dog, I think is probably one of the biggest ones out there. And just have that reflection, you know. Prior to listening to this podcast, I dare say a large proportion of listeners would refer to themselves as an owner. I hope even if one of you go away from this podcast and think and reflect and go, do you know what? As badly as articulated as Greg did it, there was something in it. And I'm not going to try and refer to myself as an owner anymore. I'm going to try to refer to myself as a guardian or a pooch parent or whatever word for you invokes those feelings and those attachments that reflect your relationship and your role in your dog's life. And I'm hoping you choose a word that is in line with that idea of partnership. Because again, it's very easy to go down a different path. We will absolutely cover the other words around this. I might actually do a quick follow-up episode. Or actually, do you know, I'm going to dive into it now, folks. The common one I come across, and this is going to be really quite apt because myself and Carrie-Anne Selwyn, who do the Dog Training Dictionary podcast, if you don't listen, go search for it, go and find it. We talk about words and language a lot in that podcast, and what those words mean and how they use it. But anyway, I digress. You will sometimes refer to people or see people using words like leader, pack leader, alpha leader, whatever word might come across, the dominant partner in the relationship, whatever it might be. But interestingly, again, do that exercise. Put it on paper, write down, if you were to call yourself a leader with your dog, I'm their leader, what does it mean? Because funnily enough, because of all my social conditioning and all the world of dog training, if I hear somebody say the word leader, I have to stop and I have to really kind of take a breath and usually engage in conversation with that person so I can understand what they mean when they say leader. Because if someone says pack leader, I might already start to inject some thoughts, theories and opinions about that person's style, viewpoints around their relationship with their dog, and I'm fairly sure quite a lot of them I wouldn't agree with. But if that person calls themselves a leader, I definitely want to get under the skin of it. What do they mean by leader? Because if you follow me on social media, folks, a while back I did a post about a manager, for example, and we have different managers of different types, and therefore if I was to interchange that word manager with leader, we're diving down that path. What does the word leader mean to you? And is it the same as what it means to me? And what words do I associate with that term, and how do they reflect the relationship and the partnership that I have with my dog? So very, very quickly, I can almost fall into sticky ground. You know, is it? Are there the words that for me leadership means? You know, are there those kind of positive words, you know, ones where we're kind of guiding, coaching, supporting, effectively leading the way, really being that kind of positive role model? Or do I mean it more in a leader sense where I'm just telling you what to do and like it or lump it, you've got to do it? Because you can absolutely lead by both ways. So which one is it I'm doing? So again, this is why the word that we use is got to be so kind of on point with the reflection of what it means. And the first person it needs to mean something to you guys is you. Again, I've done it again. But it has to reflect what you think it means and be a fair reflection of, again, and I feel like I'm on repeat, that partnership. You know, is whatever tag, whatever label that you use, is that a reflection of your dynamic with your dog? So just to kind of bring that out, the if you're looking for that social media post, I actually titled it Bosses. And I'm just going to read this out to you guys, because I think, again, if you think about leadership, if you want to call yourself your dog's boss, absolutely fine again, but which kind of one of these things is it? So in this social media post titled Bosses, this is what I put. Have you ever had a boss who told you to do things that seemed stupid, waste of time, and in fact their request actually stopped you doing something more productive? Have you ever had one that was always there to tell you when you've done something wrong or something bad, but never really acknowledged the 99% of the time when you're doing really good work? What about those ones that act like you should be glad to be there, and that your desire for more engagement, feeling of value or worth doesn't matter at all, and you should just be thankful for what you have? Or even those bosses who have those split personalities. One minute they're shouty and fiery, and the next they're trying to be your best friend, and you never really know what to expect. And as such, you're never really sure what version of them you're going to get, so you're always slightly on edge. Or how about those bosses that work with you, supporting, guiding, mucking in with you, understanding your pressure but challenge you to be your best, the ones that give you as much respect as you give them, ones that have your well-being in mind as well as the work, ones that don't even feel like a boss but a supportive leader you actually want? And I ended this with, I've worked for small independent, national and multinational and FTSE 100 companies, and during the time I've worked with all kinds of bosses and leaders. A natural leader for me is always what I want. It makes me happy, I enjoy my work and deal with the stresses much better, and they've developed me to be better as a professional and as a person. And I ended it again with so what's this got to do with dog training? Well, read it again and you tell me. So there you go, folks. Regardless of what word you're going to use to describe yourself moving forward, write it on a piece of paper. Write all the associated words, feelings, and emotions that that word invokes into you, and see, is that a reflection of my relationship and how I see my role in that partnership dynamic with me and my dog? And if it does, I'm very confident it will be the right type of word. It will be positive, it will be inspiring, and it will be respectful. If it's not, then I will direct you to a different podcast, and it was lovely having you. So folks, my first episode diving into the world of language, and particularly the word owners with our dogs. So they will definitely do more of these moving into the new year. But for now, thank you so much for listening to episode number 34, and I'll be back again, probably on the other side of the Christmas and the new year in 2022, with episode 35. But until then, thank you for listening, folks. Have a good one. Goodbye. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening to the Woofing Possum podcast. As always, if you do want to get in touch, you can find us on social media. I'm at Great Paws NE, which is Great Paws NE for Northeast, on both Facebook and Instagram. You can also contact me via my website, which is greatpaws.co.uk. And you can also consume some free online courses at greatpawsgang.co.uk. Excellent. Thank you very much, folks, and we will see you soon for our next episode.